your paradise. If you think I'm spending eternity with you, then you better think twice.
Hello and welcome to the Sydney Atheist Podcast, the not agreed upon views of the hosts are members of Sydney Atheists. And of course, I have to be very careful how I say that, because it could be misunderstood by people who are hard of understanding. And some such listeners have in fact contacted us. In the studio with me is Dave the Happy Singer.
Hello.
And Jason Brown.
Hi, Ian.
Stretch of tedium and strife, and the tales of the father are simply not true. So much for heaven, and so much for you. So much for heaven, and so much for you.
So, Dave, did you get approached on Twitter by a pastor?
Yes. Jason. Well, that was me.
Oh, I'm sorry, it was Jason.
Yes. We were all involved in this, but yes, it was me. I made a little joke a little while ago about the Australian Vaccination Network, who listeners to some other podcasts we appear on will probably know about. The joke was as follows. Why do so many anti-vaccinationists go to chiropractors? Because there's nothing wrong with an anti-vaccinationist that a sharp twist of the neck wouldn't fix.
Not a bad joke.
I thought that was relatively funny.
Not a bad, a bit of a throwaway gag.
It's all just, under 140 characters for Twitter.
Yeah.
It was all right. But a pastor from Neutral Bay took exception to this and decided that I was making jokes about taboo subjects and espousing violence and advocating the wringing of the necks of anti-vaccinationists, which was interesting. Because that's not actually what I was doing. I was taking the mickey. But still.
Didn't he go a bit further with that and explain why that was bad?
He went quite a long way further. And he attempted to use the Sydney Atheists' statement of principles. I guess,
yes.
Guess it is on the website. That we're ethical and we're
respectful
and considerate and blah, 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 and compassionate and all that stuff.
Which we are.
Well, I don't see how a joke contravenes that statement at all.
So hold on. This guy is anti-vaccination?
He's not.
He's just anti-Jason.
Is he an anti-pastor? Is he an anti-pastor pastor?
He's an anti-pastor. Lovely.
He has followed the Stop the AVN campaign, and I think he's on our side on that. He just took particular exception to this one.
So
we have had arguments and disagreements in the past.
So he doesn't like atheists.
He doesn't understand
so
atheists. Seems.
If he's an anti-flying spaghetti monster person, does that make him an anti-pastor pastor?
Oh, I see what you did there.
Oh, lordy.
How many of these have you got saved up?
One more. Basically, in saying prayers before meal is an anti-pastor pastor.
So, is he actually a pastor? He's an Anglican.
He's been described as pastor to me.
But yeah, he says on his Twitter bio.
We'll totally lose this argument if we use the wrong word.
Yeah, we totally will.
He'll just say, you even got my title wrong. Shows how much you know.
So anyway, this brings up the topic of whether there are certain subjects that are off limits to jokes. And I was wondering whether you guys might perhaps have some input on this. I mean, Dave, you're a comedy songwriter.
Of sorts.
Of sorts.
Yeah. I've never sung about snapping a chiropractor's neck. But,
I was anti-vaxxer's name.
David, what did I say?
But it doesn't say that. Yeah. It doesn't say that. Your joke actually just says that a twist to the neck, which is what chiropractic is. So surely the malice is all in the mind of the listener.
Well, yeah.
Well, that is,
that's
that
what
always,
makes it funny.
That's Humphrey Littleton's excuse. Well, not anymore, he's dead. But,
hey.
Yeah,
that was always his excuse when,
not the mouth comes out of, it's the mind it goes into.
I'm sorry I haven't a clue was always made ridiculous innuendos. And
it pushed
limits for the BBC, especially when it started. And Humphrey Littlerun, I think, accurately said, well, actually, all the smut's in your own mind. You know, there's nothing smutty about the joke. And it was always kind of puns on, you know, she'll help me get it up kind of thing.
One of the greatest ones I remember is Stephen Fry was on there. And they do a round called Uxbridge English Dictionary.
Oh, yes,
which is new definitions to old words. And his word was countryside. And his definition was to kill Piers Morgan. And I thought that was, wow.
That
coming from the mouth of Stephen Fry, that was brilliant. So yeah,
but Piers Morgan, has been very upset with Stephen Fry ever since.
Wow, of course.
But
so do you have to be disrespectful to in a joke generally somewhere?
No, I don't think you have to
for it to be funny.
No, well,
there's a lot of humour that involves a level of disrespect. I mean, otherwise, you'd just have to knock jokes. Really.
Isn't that partly why things are funny as well? Like you can say something to someone. Basically, you can, I'm trying to think how to say it. You say something that it's the opposite of reality and it's funny. You're saying something negative because you don't believe it and that's why it's funny. It could be one example.
This, yeah, that you've got to take something that's broadly plausible and then twist it. You know, so you've got to exaggerate something or you've got to put a surprise in there.
Hmm. And so, you know, it does exaggerate chiropractic and it does bring in the edgy sort of black humor edge of wringing the necks of anti-vaxxers. But it doesn't mean I'm advocating that position at all.
No.
I don't really see a problem with it.
In fact, if you're advocating it, you wouldn't joke.
For a start, there's loads of problems about anti-vaxxers that wouldn't be cured by a snap to the neck. You know?
Yeah.
What you need is you need a stake through the heart or some garlic.
Aha!
Surely yes. You can just vaccinate against it.
There is no vaccine against stupidity.
Unfortunately. Yeah, but then, so, David went on to say that I don't think jokes about murder or rape are funny.
And then I replied.
I don't think he said that. Didn't he just say jokes against murder and rape aren't funny, rather than I don't think?
Maybe he didn't.
I can't recall his exact wording, but that was the sentiment.
I need to know.
But he was still, you know, even if he did say that, he was misrepresenting his opinion as a fact. Jason's response, I think, was something along the lines of, that's your problem.
Well, my initial response was, so, David Auld thinks jokes like that aren't funny? He's going to hate it when I do the one about the Pope raping Mother Teresa, which he really didn't like. Particularly got injured by that one.
When you say Pope, you mean the man who's actually been found to have been protecting people who actually did actual real life rape on children.
That's the one.
That Pope.
That guy. That
Pope.
That
Pope that David Auld apparently still supports.
That one. Yeah.
That one.
Although he's not a Catholic.
No, he's not a Catholic.
He's Anglican.
But so they stick together. You know,
they
the do. Enemy of my enemy is my friend.
Yes. So this Twitter battle developed over time and Ian got sucked into it and Dave got sucked into it and we ended up with the wonderful hashtag comedy is dead. Because I expressed the opinion that David had then killed comedy forever by me having to explain it so thoroughly. So comedy is dead.
It's just some puffed up little twat telling me what I may and may not joke about.
It's infuriating.
We've had very similar conversations. David also objects to the use of words like sky fairy to describe his imaginary friend.
He really doesn't like
sky.
That,
he doesn't like sky.
He doesn't like imaginary friend.
He doesn't like imaginary friend. And he says, don't you understand that that's just winding people up? Don't you understand that that's offensive? And I'm like, what's more offensive is you telling me that I can't use that language. You know, much more offensive than anything I could say to you is you trying to restrict my freedom to say that.
Doesn't he understand that's offensive and it just winds people up? To tell them what not to do?
Well, yeah.
It's offensive to me.
I think it's more offensive that he would dare to tell me that there's certain things that I can't say about his imaginary friend.
Well, hold on. If you were to say to him, you are, from now on, this is a public forum, you can no longer say the word God, because after all, God is a fraught word. It's a word rather than a noun. So that to even call your God God is in fact an insult to your God. So that if you're a believer in your God, you'd be insulting your God anyway. So you're being disrespectful. And I don't want you to be disrespectful to your own God because that annoys me. So stop it.
I think that would make his head explode.
So David Auld's joke police ruined a number of classic jokes.
It ruined my afternoon. But then the comedy is dead hashtag turned it all around for me.
I suppose that was...
The anti-joke.
That was...
It was great. Just take a joke and change the ending so that it's just really not funny anymore, and somehow it becomes funny again.
It's an easy
really,
joke.
Really good.
So I'm just.
I even got to use the "your vagina is in sync" joke.
Now I don't know the original of that. Could you maybe enlighten us on firstly what the real joke is?
The real joke goes: a new bride is talking to her friends at the hen night, and she's told her husband to be that she's a virgin, but she's not. So one of her friends says, "Look, I know what to do about this." What you do is you get some liver and you shove it up there and then when you have sex, you'll feel all tight and like it's the first time. She goes, that's an absolutely brilliant idea. So come the wedding day and the wedding night, they have crazy sex all over the hotel. It's unbelievable. And they fall asleep satisfied. But the next morning, And bride wakes up and her new husband's gone. And there's just a note on the pillow that says, look, I really think we've made a mistake in getting into this, and I just couldn't go on. I've left. P.S. Your vagina's in the sink. It's an old, terrible classic joke, but I got to use it. I've never got to use that in a public forum before. Apropos of nothing. But there you go.
So, and the comedy is dead hashtag began when Jason, swiftly joined by me and then by others, took these jokes and replaced them with, replaced the humor with fact. So, for example, what time does the Chinaman go to the dentist? There is no reason to think that appointments are arranged along racial lines. Tom Croucher, Tomfoolery 101 from the Skeptic Bros, offered, your mama's so fat she should really see a healthcare professional, perhaps a GP, and see about a referral to a specialist.
See, these are funny.
There's one of yours here. The barman says, why the big pause? And the bear says, oh, that was for dramatic effect.
Oh, I'm laughing at my own and jokes. Fact, that's sinful.
They are often funnier than the real jokes.
Yeah. And the barman says to the horse, why the long face? Oh, I've been depressed recently.
Oh,
I love it.
Dear.
And so that controversy is not the only controversy this podcast has been in, though, is it?
This absolutely brings us on to the next bit of comedy. And the next bit of comedy was about a remark we made in the first podcast about some dissatisfaction with the policies of the Australian Greens.
Yeah, I mean, I think I probably was responsible for starting this. Well, I mentioned in passing on the show before last, the Atheist Reading List show, that I found the policy of the Greens to be less than entirely rational on nuclear power. And I didn't really elaborate why I thought that, but it seems to me that the Greens say that nuclear power is not safe, and it seems like a foolish absolute. You've got to qualify.
That wasn't the problem that came across.
That's why I started. We moved on to other things. But that was the first thing that I thought they were being a bit irrational. And then obviously, you know, if you listen to the show, we then went on to talk about Lucas Heights and about medical nuclear.
Well, I can actually play that clip.
Well, if you've got the clip queued up.
Can I just put the context briefly? The reason we got onto this is that I was discussing David Marr's book about religious organizations affecting Australian politics. And we're saying there's been a shift. They're affecting it less because people aren't just voting for the same parties. They're now voting Green as well. And they said, well, Greens, they're great. We just have this slight disagreement. And here's the thing we disagree about. And in your case, it was nuclear power. In my case, it was nuclear medicine. And here's the clip. They're anti-nuclear medicine, which is where I take issue with them, because nuclear medicine helps a lot of people, and Australia is one of the few places in the world that still makes nuclear medicine. We have a medical reactor at ANSTO, at the Australian Nuclear Science Technology Organisation in
Lucas Heights,
and they want to shut it down, and we can't import nuclear medicine from the other side of the world because its half-life is such that it won't last very long by the time it gets here. Anyway, it provoked a response from a candidate of the Greens Party who listened to the podcast, who thought we were not just a little bit wrong, but extremely wrong. In fact, possibly so wrong that we're bad people. I've got the letter. I'll get to the screen cap in a moment. So, shall we mention his name or not?
Yes, it's Jim McDonald from Noosaville.
One of the qualities atheist activists claim is reliance of facts over irrational belief. It's a fine ethic, but one that you did not follow in your podcast when you digress on the Greens' nuclear policy and the party's view on nuclear medicine. You behaved, liked, be religious. Never mind the facts, this is what I believe. As an atheist who happens to be a Green, who also stood in the last election, I have had to deal with the lies from political opponents that follow the Goebbels principle. I don't expect to hear similar misinformation from atheists. You clearly have no idea what the Greens' nuclear policy is. Why don't you apply atheist principles and check the facts? He gives us a link here, greens.org.au/policies/climate-change-and-energy/nuclear. There you will find the Greens do no oppose nuclear medicine. The Australian Greens will promote the development of non-reactor technologies for the production of radioisotopes for medical and scientific purposes. And that is the context of closing down Lucas Heights, There are good reasons for closing Lucas Heights, not the least that it is within suburban boundaries. That bears no resemblance at all to your assertion. The principal thrust of the Greens' nuclear policy is against nuclear energy, uranium mining, and nuclear weapons. You also make unfounded and implicit assertion that the Greens pragmatically changed their policy for the last election. That is not true. The Greens' policies are reviewed regularly, and the last consolidation was in 2009, the previous one in 2008. While you're at it, check how many Green... While you are at it, check out how many non-Green councils have anti-nuclear signs around the country. So, we complained about... Well, I complained about the anti-nuclear signs because they seem like a waste of money and they make no point because there are no nuclear weapons in Australia, so why put up a sign and pay the money? But the rest of it's also a bit of a problem. I love the fact that he didn't actually directly call us Nazis. Instead said that he didn't expect to hear something similar to the lies of his political opponents who follow the Goebbels principle. What? On Twitter, he explained the Goebbels principle to be repeating something endlessly until someone believes it.
Right.
Which we only...
We repeated it almost two times.
At most.
And did anyone believe it?
Well,
I would hope...
But the other thing is that he's still... What he's said the Greens' policy is doesn't actually contradict what we said in any way, shape, or form. I had a look at the policy. I mean, it's good of him to link.
Policy as well.
And the thing is, they want to close the reactor. They want to stop the mining of uranium. And they want to promote the development of non-reactor technologies. Well, what does that mean? And why do you want to promote the development of the technologies after you've closed it? Surely you want a replacement for the medical radioisotopes before you close the only source of them.
And that's the way I read the policy as well. The policy was, we will close Lucas Heights as soon as possible. And then, you know, we'll work on another.
Well, it is. It's, building it's stuff. Listed here. The Australian Greens will, number 17, close the Opal nuclear reactor at Lucas Heights.
So this is important because I looked into this as deeply as I could on without actually doing another interview. Although I did leave a message on the Green site for them to give me somebody to interview on the subject, and they've not replied. Now, the problem is that the medical radioisotopes, 85% of the medical radioisotopes are in fact technetium-99m, and it's used in radio imaging, and the problem is it's made from uranium. So if you close down the uranium mines, as is the Greens' policy...
Are we going to import uranium then?
Then we'd have to import uranium for the non-reactor technologies. Now, the other problem is there are no commercially available non-reactor technologies for making technetium-99. There is, in fact, a new process that's been discovered that can do it, and the Canadian government in February 2011 has put in $35 million to develop accelerator-based sources of technetium-99 using fission of uranium by very large sources of light using accelerators.
Using accelerators, massively energetically inefficient.
Well, that's one of the two problems. One of the problems is it's massively, it's 3,000 times more energy to get the same result. And the other problem is that technetium-99 is the end product that you use in medicine.
Mm.
The reactors don't make technetium-99, they make molybdenum-99. That has a half-life of 60 hours, so you can transport it all around Australia, and in fact you could export it or import it from other countries. Technetium-99 is only good for 6 hours.
6 hours.
So basically,
well,
you need the accelerator.
Why
on
this
hospital.
Has to be in urban boundaries then, really.
Yes.
You know, we can't possibly build something out in the middle of the desert and get your radioisotopes to St. Vincent's Hospital in 6 hours.
Well, you need an accelerator small enough for every hospital to have one in order for 6 hours to be good enough.
I think it's in the nature of accelerator technology that it's not really particularly portable.
So far, but hopefully the Canadian research, if they put money into it and time, we don't know how long it would take, but they may be able to miniaturize these and make them small enough and cheap enough, but it's something for the future.
I mean, I worry about the energy requirements. I mean, it's 3,000 times less efficient in terms of energy. Where are we going to get that energy from if we can't have nuclear power? More coal burning power stations, perhaps? I don't know. Maybe the Greens have got a policy on that as well. Are they going to build a solar station just outside Sydney to run the accelerator?
I think that's what they claim, that they can do it with entirely renewable energy.
Well,
and again, it's their job to convince us.
But they've got to dig up uranium because it's the source material for the technetium-99. You can't make it from anything but uranium. The other problem, the thing is, the Greens missed a point here too, is that until last year, until the OPAL reactor that they want to close, the OPAL reactor is actually doing the right thing. It's using low-enriched uranium. The old reactor and all the other reactors in the world except for one in South Africa that's just opened up 2 years ago are using weapons-grade, highly enriched uranium. Australia was using weapons-grade uranium. So the Greens would have had something to shout about, and particularly the fact that if we weren't making it here, and the signs are that if we were able to and were enriching uranium to weapons grade, I think United Nations and the US would be on us like a ton of bricks. Therefore, we were importing it. Where were we importing weapons grade uranium from? Where were we storing it? What was going on? And why weren't the Greens making a big fuss about it?
That's a detail I didn't know about. I'm quite baffled and put out by that one.
Shouldn't they be declaring it a win that the OPAL reactor uses low-enriched uranium that can't be used to make nuclear weapons?
Well, they absolutely should. But obviously that's not going to happen with current policy.
But doesn't that take away their whole reason for being against reactors is that it's always gone hand-in-hand with nuclear weapons capability. And the reason is because you're using weapons-grade fuel. If you don't have the means to make weapons-grade fuel and you don't have a good excuse like medicine to import it, then you can't make nuclear weapons. So isn't that a good thing? Isn't the OPAL reactor exactly what they would hope for?
Well, I personally think it's a great thing. But I think they also have a bit of a fear about the bogeyman of the nuclear accident. So it probably bears explaining that Lucas Heights isn't a reactor like you'd see at Chernobyl, for instance.
It's a 20 megawatt one. It's little.
It's tiny. And while there is a remote danger of some contamination being released, it's really, really tiny.
Ian, could you give us a little bit of context on what nuclear medicine is and
sure.
and what it can be used to,
okay. you know,
how it benefits us?
Most of nuclear medicine is about imaging. So you'd be injecting a radioactive dye in someone and then you'll do a scan of some sort. You might do
is this PET scans?
You might do
positron emission tomography.
PET scans is one use, although there are some accelerator-based medicines that you can substitute for PET scans. So you can make some medicines in accelerators, but they're different ones to the ones you can make in reactors. They complement each other. They're not replacements for each other, except for technetium-99 in the future, once the Canadians have sorted out how to do it, or if somebody else does the research on how to do it. So imaging's the main use. It might be a PET scan. It might be a SPECT scan. There's all different sorts of ways that they can do imaging of things like blood clots. My father had a blood clot in his leg, and the only way they picked it up was with a radioactive dye. He could have died if they hadn't caught the blood clot in his leg before it went up to his heart or his brain.
Mm, and that does kill people.
And that does kill people on quite a regular basis. It's also used to treat cancer. So there are nuclear medicines that either radiotherapy that actually kills the cancer and cures it, because we can cure some kinds of cancer now using nuclear medicine.
Oh.
Or there's also types of things. There's things like Quadramet, which is actually a painkiller for people with severe pain from bone cancers, where it's the only painkiller that they can take that doesn't dope them up so that they're not in the world anymore. So they can still interact with their friends and family and be in the moment while not being in awful, horrible pain.
And this is based on radioisotopes?
It's a radioisotope-based medicine that's only made in reactors. So when you close down Lucas Heights, as happened when there were protesters there a few years ago, the Quadramet sources close up and all those people are in unbearable agony until the new sources come online.
Hmm.
No, so that's what they're used for.
One of the things I think that Jim McDonald was objecting to was the assertion that the policy is anti-nuclear medicine. And I'd like to kind of highlight, in a way, the paradox within the policy itself. The policy declares itself to be pro-nuclear medicine, but at the same time, promises to close down our only medical reactor and doesn't give a replacement for it at all. So even though the policy itself is claiming, I am this, it's actually not. And I think that's a matter of opinion, and I think that shouldn't even be in the policy.
Well, it's not even a matter of opinion. Like,
it's
when there is a
how the rest of the policy runs.
Yeah, when there is a non-reactor replacement for technetium-99 and everything else, if you've got a non-reactor replacement for all of them, if you work that out and you can just go and buy it, or you can go and build a way to do it that's equivalent, then you've got something to talk about, a reason for closing down the reactor. You haven't got a good reason to close down the mining because the mining provides the base raw materials. So you either have to import it or mine it. You're stuck. And the Greens don't address that so far. They might address it if I was able to have an interview with someone who's up on nuclear policy for the Greens, but so far I haven't been able to contact them that way.
Can we just come back maybe a little bit to this Goebbels thing? Because Jim said that his political opponents had used the Goebbels principle and he didn't expect atheists to do that. And I suggested then on Twitter that he'd compared me to Goebbels. And Jim then came back on Facebook and then accused me of libeling him. Me libeling him. why did he bring up the Goebbels principle if not to talk about what we had, quite apart from the fact that we weren't employing the Goebbels principle at all? We might be doing now because we've come back to the topic.
It's an indirect way of calling us Nazis without directly calling us Nazis. It's an almost deniable way if you didn't know English well enough.
Put a little cutout in the middle to say that you're like my political opponents and my political opponents are Nazis.
I'm sorry, but I might not be a logician, but he was comparing it to Goebbels. Did I libel him in suggesting in my 140 characters that might have been the intention of his mentioning of Goebbels in a complaint about me?
I don't think you libeled him at all, but that would be for the courts to decide.
Okay. I think if you compare someone to someone who is like a Nazi, then you are comparing someone to a Nazi.
Yeah, it's...
And I believe Goebbels was a Nazi. There, can't you?
Goebbels was apparently a Nazi, or at least a Nazi sympathizer.
That's what I've heard as well.
Yeah. Oh.
So, look, I think this is really interesting because if I hadn't been asked this question, I wouldn't have known about this new Canadian research that just is about to start this year that hasn't been done yet. So that there is a reaction that you can use to turn some uranium, into some technetium-99 without actually going through a nuclear reaction. It's still fission of uranium. It's just not using neutrons. It's using light instead of neutrons. So why is that?
Is it safer? Or?
Safer? Okay. Lucas Heights does have problems because they're handling radioactive materials. So there are people that have been hurt there through that, and ComCare's been looking at a case recently, some complaints there. The same thing would happen at an accelerator because you're dealing with radioactive source material and radioactive products, so it's got all those dangers, and there's still radioactive waste.
And you've got the huge amount of energy input, so you've got, people are going to get electrocuted by the massive transformers that are needed.
This non-reactor technology is not no panacea.
Okay.
It's no holy grail.
The win of it is that reactors have been associated with weapons-grade materials and excuses for having weapons-grade ingredients, which means you could make weapons. So with the accelerator, you're not even using a reactor, so you can't turn it into a weapon. But if you've got low-enriched uranium, which is what we have at the Opal reactor at Lucas Heights, you can't make weapons out of that either. So therefore, surely one's just as good as the other, and there's no magic. Like it used to be, you could say automatically, look, Iran wants a reactor so they can make medicine, or they just want to have the enriched uranium so they can have weapons.
Oh, Iran, yeah.
So there's been actually negotiations in the last 3 months with Iran to say, look, how about you don't make your own enriched uranium because we don't trust you, and instead we have a United Nations reactor that's not controlled by any nation, and it makes the weapons-grade stuff, and that is sold to you for use in your reactors so that you can make medicine. Now, the problem with that is they're still getting weapons-grade uranium. The solution is the Australian Opal reactor, which uses low-enriched uranium, or the South African reactor, which also uses low-enriched uranium with a totally different mechanism to the Australian one. So if they use those, they have no excuse for having weapons-grade uranium in the country. Like, we have no excuse for having weapons-grade uranium in the country since we're not making weapons and we don't need it. And surely that would satisfy anybody who's against the proliferation of nuclear weapons.
It all sounds very, very rational in a way that this policy document does. And I'm looking at the page that Jim pointed us to, and it just doesn't strike me as measured. It just seems to be listing absolute after absolute after absolute. No nuclear, no nuclear, no nuclear, no nuclear. And
why is fissioning uranium in an accelerator, simply because you're not using neutrons to start it, in any way less nuclear than in a reactor? Surely that's a that's a theology problem rather than a real world problem.
It's a little bit It's a bit homeopathic that water that's been banged against the Bible is different to water that hasn't been banged against the Bible.
You know, if you're telling me that your policy is to abandon nuclear technology because you don't think it's safe, the best way to present it to me is to say it's currently not safe. These are the conditions under which we would consider it safe, and until these conditions are met, we won't do it. Not this dogmatic...
Promote the development.
You know, the 25 commandments, which is what we've got here, and that's... You know, when I originally made the offhand remark that I found it irrational, it's on that basis, because it strikes me as just dogma for dogma's sake, and not measured, not explained, not argued. No. And there's no...
I found some of it argued. Basically, if you go off the Greens to the more extreme ones like Friends of the Earth, they have someone called Jim Green who's written almost all of the papers that you will find on the interwebs about why we should go for non-reactor-based nuclear medicine. Up to a few years ago, he was the sole source. Now there's actual research, which is what's led to the Canadian investment, so that people have actually found some. But up to that point, it was just, geez, that'd be a really good idea. And it's not enough to say it's just a really good idea. They need to argue it, as you say, and they need to explain why an accelerator-based one is better. If there are no weapons involved in low-enriched uranium reactors, and there are no weapons involved in accelerators,
and the risk,
please
the
explain
risk
the difference.
Surely about the same for the two.
I think so, but maybe I'm wrong, and in which case I want to hear about it from their expert who developed the policy. Obviously, look, surely in developing this policy, they had some idea, and therefore they can tell us what that is. If only they haven't explained it clearly on their website, but someone from the Greens who's across their nuclear policy can tell me, and then I'll happily interview them on my radio show because I want to know. Now, lest they say we're being unfair in pointing out the inconsistencies in just one party's policies, look, the Liberal Party seem to have the policy that dig all the uranium you like, export it all, nuclear power sounds ace, don't worry about the fact that we don't know what to do with the waste and neither does anyone else in the world and no one solved it at all. Mm. And don't worry about nuclear weapons. We're not interested right now, but we reserve the right to change our minds. Labour Party basically said two mines only for uranium. Oh, okay, maybe three. Okay, maybe more. And they seem to be saying, no, nuclear power, not now. Well, it may be part of the mix. Even if solar power is cheaper than coal, coal and nuclear power will always be part of the mix of energy supplies for this country. Both parties said that at the election before last. So... Well, the Labour Party and the Liberal Party in Australia don't have great policies for nuclear things either.
No, that
but the Greens, I want to be happy voting for them that they have rational policies across the board, and yeah. This is one where I think they're not quite right.
And I still maintain that, you know, on a social basis, which is the kind of thing that I care most about, that, you know, the Greens is the biggest party that seems to match my opinions, you know, and the socially liberal, and I tend to admire a lot of what they stand for.
Yeah, it's kind of difficult when there is a lot in the platform that we would support, you know, being pinko, left-wing, commie liberals.
Atheists.
With bleeding hearts.
Bleeding hearts. You know? That's the one.
But who else is there? The Australian Sex Party seem to have very rational social policies as well, but they're so closely tied to the Eros Foundation. You see, this is we're going to start a whole new kind of wound. We'll have Fiona Patton sending us nasty emails, comparing us to Stalin.
No, Fiona Patton's tough.
I'm not going to argue with Fiona Patton.
And Fiona Patton was available for interview as well, which was great.
I love Fiona Patton.
So, the Eros Foundation, why is that a problem?
They're the industry lobby group for the sex industry.
Yes.
And the sex party is basically, as I understand it, and I really don't want to get into another fight with another political party now, but about the sex party is grown out of the Eros Foundation, so.
But they're independent of them?
I'm not convinced that they're entirely independent.
Do they claim to independence?
As far as I know, and I could be completely wrong, a lot of the funding still comes from Eros.
But that's not a problem, surely, because a lot of the funding for the other parties comes from all over the place.
True, but they do at least have a diversity of funding, and the sex party is far less diverse in its funding base, as far as I know. But I could be completely wrong, and I'd be happy to correct
If only we had web access where we could check
these things. Yeah, let's look into the sex party and get back to you next time.
I don't know what their policies are on things like religious influence in schools or...
They're very secular.
They're very similar.
Yeah.
Well, if only I could just click on a link here to tell me what the policies are.
Well, you can. You just click policies, federal policies. Australian Sex Party federal policies. There you go.
Right. Do they mention power?
Power?
Nuclear medicine, nuclear power, nuclear weapons.
Hmm. No, I don't think they do. But so I do seem to remember them saying when somebody asked, what's your policy on this, what's your policy on this, and they gave the reasonable answer that they're quite a young party and they've not established policies on everything and that they're going to follow a, you know, that they're not going to rush to just slap down some policy for the sake of covering policy in every area, but they're going to approach it on a rational basis and, you know, develop it over time. But I've always had the impression that they tend to be fairly rational. And those things that they do speak out about, you know, such as, you know, censorship particularly, they've been fantastic on. You know, on religion and ethical issues, I've actually got a section here with maybe establishment of a royal commission into child sex abuse in religious institutions.
Support.
The public education system should be secular in nature and not provide for any religious instruction whatsoever.
Support.
An ethics course along the lines of the current New South Wales trial developed by the St. James Ethics Centre to be incorporated into the national curriculum.
Support.
Ending the tax-exempt status for religions.
Support.
Cessation of tax-exempt status on all but the charitable work of religious institutions.
Yes.
Support stem cell research, including embryonic stem cell research, and maintains it is a vital medical issue, not a religious issue.
Right.
Support.
Behind that.
Supports women's rights to have an abortion if they so choose.
Yep.
Calls for uniform state abortion laws and amendments to the Therapeutic Good Act to allow... Oh, you're going to have to tell me.
Are you 486?
I'm not... to be imported and distributed... widely in place of the highly restrictive and cumbersome authorised prescriber process, which resulted from the Harrigan amendments to the Therapeutic Goods Amendment Bill 1996. I think that's a support.
And the last one.
And the opponent opposes a blanket ban on women wearing the burqa, conditional upon it being the woman's choice.
I mean, right behind that.
That's just one section of the policy document, but isn't it refreshing?
It is.
It's
stunning.
Awesome.
Now, the Sex Party doesn't need to pander to religious voters because the Sex Party is never going to attract religious votes.
Yes.
They know this.
Well, I don't know. So, the industry does get a bit of money from religious circles. If you remember during World Youth Day, a lot of the brothels around Sydney took on extra staff.
Really?
Yes.
Were the pilgrims desperate for work?
I can dig up that link and put it in the show notes. There were a lot of added staff at local brothels, which I was delighted to.
Well, it is a secret ballot. I mean, we all know that religious people have no better sexual ethics than non-religious people. And often much worse. You know, I mean, you know, the profession that's most famous for raping children isn't plumbers. It's all I'm saying. and you've got your Ted Haggard's and all the ironic things. But I wonder, with it being a secret ballot, whether they would actually vote for the Sex Party or whether they take the. I mean, they can be as loud as they want about voting for Family First or the other Christian nutter parties.
As long as they don't actually do it.
But when they actually go into the secret ballot, do they do it? Do they actually vote?
The problem in this question is that it's secret.
Well, yeah. But we could find out. I mean, imagine if you had a really fringe religious party. You know, had a really fringe candidate and they announced the votes and he only got 4 votes, but there's 5 voting members in his immediate family. We'd know that one of them didn't vote for Dad. Maybe. I don't know. That's the only way I can, you know, try and figure it out. Unless we did, like, an anonymous kind of exit poll where we asked fundies, you know, swore to fundies we'd never tell anyone, but did you actually vote?
I don't think they'd even tell the truth then.
Really?
No. I wouldn't.
Oh.
I'd like to exit poll people anyway on principle.
So, did the Sex Party end up coalizing with anybody? Was there a coalition of the Sex Party and the Pirate Party and the Greens? Because that would be an awesome
sexy
axis.
Pirates.
Green
sexy. Green pirates.
Yes.
Wow.
Because the Pirate Party have a reasonable platform.
No.
What?
Now you've got me thinking of Fiona Patton dressed as a pirate. Going, arr.
Oh.
I think it's been a good thing for us to discuss, though. It's not really been strictly, we've not talked about religion much, apart from the fact that David Owens, a clergyman.
Humour-free.
Okay.
But he didn't have to be a clergyman to be humour-free, but I think it, you know.
It's interesting that I mean, I haven't read enough of his stream to see whether he ever made any jokes of his own. So he's just telling everyone else to shut up, or is he also humorless himself?
I have to say, I've never heard him make a funny joke.
Is he against dancing as well?
And music? Probably, it's sinful. Leaping and dancing
because it could lead to music.
Wait a minute, is flash dance with it?
No. Now I'm imagining David Oldham the leotard. I don't think he's a very funny man. He's very sarcastic. Extremely sarcastic, but...
He's self-defeatingly sarcastic.
Yeah, because he never actually answers the question or addresses the argument. He just goes, yeah, that's exactly what I said. And I'm like, well, on the face of it, it is.
But it's worse than that. I mean, he's basically seems to be a Twitter equivalent of a schoolyard bully going, if you say boo, he'll come and try and step on you. If you say, I didn't ask for the boot. Oh, yes, you did. And you said, well, I was just asking this. And if you point out to him that what he's doing is ridiculous, then he goes away.
Eventually.
Well, and it was pretty quick. I know, my conversation with him was pretty quick.
I, to be honest, I didn't expect to hear from him on this particular joke at all. I was fairly shocked at first and then treated it as an opportunity to have a good argument.
Yeah.
And I do like a good argument.
Yes. And rolls are sandwiches.
Oh, right. There's going to be trouble in about an hour. While we're here, shall we plug?
I think we should definitely give it a mention.
Speaking of rolls being sandwiches.
Yeah. Jason, right, you talk about other podcasts.
Jason and I are launching a new podcast.
We are.
Coming out.
With a deep sense of foreboding.
Within a week or two of the issue of this show.
Within a couple of days of the issue.
And
the show,
it's called In Vino Veritas.
Mm.
Jason, what's the premise of the show?
The premise of the show? Well, it's easily explained. Two blokes with microphones and big, big glasses of wine. We'll talk a little bit about the wine, because you've got to do that snobby thing. But the rest of the time we'll just chat and riff and be pointlessly grandiose. And pretentious and funny, hopefully.
Is this different to now?
And we'll have wine.
We will have wine. It's yeah. It's and no you.
Oh, thank you.
No, and we're going to edit it and keep the very funniest bits. And
that is different to now.
I think the features of the show will probably evolve over time. But check it out at invinoveritaspodcast.com or follow at vinocast on Twitter.
That's right.
And the hashtag #vinocast.
Yes. And I should mention as well that diffusionradio.com has Peter Bowditch, alias Ratbag from the Australian Skeptics, on Monday and possibly every week after that for as long as he keeps interested.
Yeah. Check out Diffusion Science Radio. Subscribe to the podcast. Don't listen to 2SER. That's old media. do listen to 2SER because it's community old media.
It's old media. All right. Because it's community.
What's the website?
It's diffusionradio.com.
That's diffusionradio.com. Send email to sydneyatheistpodcast@gmail.com. Please send us emails because, I've met loads of people in real life who really enjoyed the last couple of shows that we've done and who told me, but they haven't sent an email and Ian doesn't believe me. So if you are enjoying,
you can send a tweet.
Send a tweet to @sydneyatheist.
Yes.
Yeah. Send a tweet to @sydneyatheist. Remember, please, that our views are our own and do not represent the views of Sydney Atheists.
Because
do
we
not
discuss them.
Sydney Atheists do not endorse the snapping of anti-vaxxers' necks. And as far as I know, Sydney Atheists has got absolutely no position whatsoever on nuclear power. Nor should it. You know, we want to be there for all people, including Jim McDonald, and Jim McDonald's friends. We're not in the business of upsetting people, but we do like the chat.
Oh, we'll have a little bit.
Well, yeah, we will enjoy
but
a
we also,
discussion.
I mean,
but we're trying to find the truth.
Kind of him to point out what he thought was our misunderstanding of the Greens' policy.
That was great. Less Goebbels, more explaining.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. He gave us a link and everything.
Yeah. So thanks, Jim.
I don't like Goebbels. Prefer hamsters.
Oh, it was a matter of time. Get out. Okay. I'm ending this show now.
for heaven. So much for paradise. If you think I'm spending eternity with you, then you better think twice. So much for the angels. So much for glory. If the prophets had seen you coming, they'd have written a different story. So if you're sticking here till the end of time, sorry mate, I think I'll be off. There's a bloke in purgatory as advertised. The spare room in his lot. So much for the blessing. So much for the afterlife. A never-ending stretch of tedium and strife. And the tales of Nirvana are simply not true. So much for heaven, and so much for you. So much for heaven, and so much for you.